unfortunately, if you have such reverence for someone, mm-hmm. not having met them, and then you meet the man or the woman, and they aren't this parallel light that you've received, you know, from mm-hmm. from their artistry. But in their case, Wayne and Joni, they're beyond shining and true to their word, if you will, you know, and their expression.
Und damit herzlich willkommen zum Elbphilharmonie Talk. Wir sind Tom und Julika aus dem Team der Elbphilharmonie und du hast, lieber Tom, für diese Folge ja mit dem Drummer, mit dem Jazz-Drummer Brian Blade gesprochen. Ich glaube, auch wieder so reingequetscht irgendwie zwischen Soundcheck und Konzert, oder?
Ja, aber das hatte er selber angeboten. Wir haben, man konnte mit ihm selber darüber kommunizieren und er hat gesagt, nee, ist okay, nach dem Soundcheck vorm Konzert, das fing ja auch erst um 8:30 an, da ist dann ein bisschen Luft dazwischen und während wir sprachen, hat seine Band gegessen und als wir fertig mit dem Reden waren, habe ich ihn einfach hochgebracht und er hat mit seinen Jungs noch schön Zeit gehabt, zu Ende zu essen oder eher noch sein Essen zu bestellen und es war sehr angenehm.
Dabei hatten die sogar spontan irgendwie auf ihren Gitarristen verzichten müssen und da wahrscheinlich auch so ein bisschen noch umproben müssen, oder?
Ja, ich weiß gar nicht, ob sie groß umproben. Sie haben ja auf ein paar Stücke, glaube ich, verzichtet, wo er jetzt wirklich eine ganz tragende Rolle hat. Das ist Kurt Rosenwinkel, das ist auch einer der wirklich großen Gitarristen, der lebt in Berlin, der unterrichtet in Berlin, ich glaube an der UdK oder an der Hans-Eisler-Hochschule. Ist ein monströs guter Gitarrist und war einfach zu krank. Der konnte auch die anderen Konzerte auf Tour nicht mitspielen und dann haben sie kurzerhand dann einfach als Quintett gespielt und Brian hat das dann nachher im Konzert auch ganz freundlich einfach nur gesagt, dass es ihnen sehr leid tut und dass sie furchtbar gerne mit ihm gespielt hätten. Aber ehrlich, es war immer noch so gut, dass eigentlich keiner jetzt ihn fürchterlich vermisst hat. Also natürlich vermisst man ihn, wenn man weiß, was da noch dazugekommen wäre, aber die Band ist in sich einfach auch als Quintett fantastisch gewesen.
Vielleicht damit nochmal zurück zu Brian Blade. Er ist eben selbst ja Jazz-Drummer in Amerika geboren und hat nicht nur diese hervorragende Band, sondern ihr seid ja dann auch ins Gespräch gekommen über so seine anderen Projekte mit also einem Who is Who der Jazz-Geschichte. Wayne Shorter, Joni Mitchell, Chick Corea.
Ja, ja, Bob Dylan, alle möglichen Leute. Und es spricht sich dann schnell rum, wenn jemand gut ist und sensibel spielen kann und musikalisch begleitet. Es gibt jetzt, die wachsen jetzt auch nicht irgendwie auf den Bäumen, diese Art von Schlagzeugern. Das merkt man schon. Nee, nicht wirklich. Also es gibt schon viele wahnsinnig tolle Trommler und Musiker überhaupt mittlerweile. Und das Niveau ist schwindelerregend hoch. Und das ist der Wahnsinn, wie die das überhaupt schaffen, da sich alle zu behaupten. Schaffen ja auch nicht alle. Aber
sehr verschiedene auch. Ne? Wir haben ja im Moment diese Jazz-Drums-Reihe hier bei uns in der Elbphilharmonie, finde ich auch.
Ja, auch ganz unterschiedliche Charaktere, total unterschiedliche. Es ist eine super spannende Reihe, eine ganz tolle Reihe, finde ich.
Wie ist das für dich, mit so einer Person zu sprechen?
Es ist eine große Freude, weil er ist einfach menschlich auch so ein angenehmer Typ. Er ist sehr warm und er guckt einem in die Augen und er hat einen feinen, freundlichen Humor und wir lieben natürlich die gleichen Leute. Also Joni Mitchell ist meine Heroin seit Ewigkeiten, Wayne Shorter auch und das Konzert mit Chick Corea war unvergesslich für mich, was er hier gespielt hat mit Eddie Gomez am Bass und Corea war in einer so traumhaft guten Form. Ja.
Deswegen, ich meine, für dich ist das ja so ein bisschen so ein persönlichen Hausgott-Treffen, oder?
Ein bisschen schon, ja. Ich meine, das würde er wahrscheinlich, so kirchlich er groß geworden ist, aber Hausgott würde er wahrscheinlich schmunzeln, mindestens. Oder sagen, oh, abwehren wahrscheinlich, komm, lass mal stecken und so.
Man soll nur einen haben.
Ja, kann man schon mehrere.
Aber darauf wollte ich dich sowieso noch ansprechen. Ihr seid ja dann tatsächlich auch zu diesen persönlichen Themen gekommen. Zu seinem Vater, der eben Prediger war, insgesamt so allgemein zum Glauben. Hattest du dir das wirklich so vorgenommen oder hat sich das so aus eurem sehr persönlichen Gespräch dann einfach entwickelt?
Nö, ich hatte mir das schon vorgenommen, weil ich weiß, wie wichtig dieser Pastor Brady Blade für ihn ist nach wie vor. Er spielt, wenn er in der Kirche ist und der Papa predigt und singt und er hat halt auch irgendwie so eine total sympathische Art. Ist weit über 80 inzwischen und dann sitzen beide Söhne, sind ja beide Schlagzeuger, sitzen dann und spielen irgendwie brav, sehr reduziert zu dieser Musik und irgendjemand spielt Orgel und das ist nicht aufgesetzt, sondern das ist ihm, glaube ich, wirklich wichtig und diese zwischen den Generationen existierende Liebe und die Lust, sich auszutauschen, voneinander zu lernen, das ist sehr entwickelt in gerade dem amerikanischen Jazz. Und das hat mich interessiert einfach.
Hattest du das Gefühl, er hat dich da sehr nah rangelassen? Oder?
Das ist immer schwer zu sagen, ob jemand einen wirklich nah ranlässt. Ich glaube einerseits ja, andererseits wird er natürlich auch diese Frage nicht das erste Mal gestellt bekommen haben und hat natürlich Antworten darauf. Gleichzeitig freut er sich dann, wenn man das wahrnimmt und wenn man das auch ernst nimmt und nicht sagt, naja, das ist ja lustig, dass du mit deinem Papa noch spielst, das ist das nicht eigentlich unter deinem Niveau oder so. Das wäre was anderes. Dann würde er einen vielleicht nicht so nah ranlassen. Aber wenn man merkt, das ist dem wirklich heilig und er möchte das, dann freut er sich darüber.
Du meintest ja, ihr habt euch schon vor vielen, vielen Jahren, 20, 25 Jahren hier in Hamburg schon mal getroffen, im Birdland.
Genau, das war das erste Konzert, das er mit der Fellowship Band gegeben hat damals. Da war die noch ganz neu, da gab es, glaube ich, 1, 2 Platten. Und ich hatte die Platte gehört und fand die wunderbar und wusste dann plötzlich natürlich, da habe ich immer noch viel die Liner Notes geguckt und die Besetzungslisten und dann gesehen, hey, der spielt bei Joni schon und wie kann das sein? Und das hat mich natürlich sehr interessiert und dann war das Konzert herrlich und dann habe ich ihn damals schon interviewt, damals noch für den NDR und er war sehr, sehr freundlich. Er war so ein Typ aus Louisiana und entspannt, ganz, ganz umgänglich und er hat sich diffus daran erinnert, glaube ich.
Sehr schön. Gut, wir haben ja nun wirklich sehr viel Jazz in der Elbphilharmonie, also ich würde davon ausgehen, er kommt hoffentlich auch ganz bald wieder.
Ja, so, wieder so Gott ihn weiterhin so gut schützt, wie er das bisher getan hat, hoffe ich noch auf viele wunderbare Konzerte mit ihm. Ne? Er war mit Wolfgang Mutspiel wiederholt hier, er wird mit dem auch wiederkommen. Ein tierisches Trio-Konzert gespielt mit Scott Colley und Mutspiel. Und das ist einfach toll. Er geht dann eben als Sideman auch total dahin und als Bandleader ist er trotzdem nicht der Zampano, auch wenn er in der Mitte sitzt, sondern das ist ein organisches, ganz tribalistisches, angenehmes Umgehen miteinander.
Ja, ich freue mich auch. Tom kommt nicht mehr raus aus dem Schwärmen.
Ja, ja.
Aber damit viel Spaß beim Hören und danke fürs Einschalten.
Yes, absolut.
Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.
I'm sitting here with Brian Blade, wonderful drummer, who has been playing in this hall a couple of times already, and we will talk about that later. But first of all, I have to say, we met, I think it must have been a good 25 years ago.
Wow.
When you came to Hamburg for the last time, and the first time, I think, ever with the Fellowship Band.
Wow.
You were playing in a little club called Birdland.
Oh, wow, yes,
it was subterranean.
Yes.
Have you any recollection of that?
You know, there's so many Kellers in Germany that I tend to blur together a little bit. But I do. You've just triggered my memory, and thank you for that. Because I didn't recall the last time we were in Hamburg.
So. I was really researching. You know, have you been here in between? And you haven't, as far as I know. And you were then still playing in a septet version with this pedal steel guitar.
Wow, okay.
Which was fantastic.
Yes, Dave Easley is such a special person and a musician. And we still get together from time to time.
That's sweet.
Yes.
So tonight, and we are just in between soundtrack and rehearsal and the concert tonight, you are forced to play without Kurt, who is the guitar player. And
yes,
of course, so no guitars, just 2 saxophones and bass and drums and piano.
Yes.
And which is also wonderful. I had the pleasure to witness the soundcheck. And the material is just the material you would play if Kurt would be here. So
yes, indeed. There are things that I tend to not include in his absence. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's just such an integral voice and unique expression that he brings, you know, to the fabric of the sound. So we miss him, unfortunately, but we wish him, you know, speedy healing. And
Were you able to play with him in the Fasching in Stockholm and in Oslo, or was he sick?
Those were the first 2 concerts, and unfortunately, yes, no, he was not.
Oh.
Well, we were hoping that by tonight, by
he would,
you know,
have recovered enough to,
but it still got a grip on him. So,
so we might hope for the people in Hungary or in Vienna that he might. Or you don't think so?
Man, I feel like we made the decision that just his well-being is mm-hmm. the priority, and to force it to try and get on a plane now, you know, the risk of relapse or worsening the condition.
You don't want to risk that.
Not, yes. Yeah. So we're letting it go for now.
So if we want to not talk about the guitar situation, still there is like a 25 years gap between first Hamburg concert with the Fellowship.
Wow.
25. Back then it was still Brian Blade's Fellowship. Now it's Brian Blade and Fellowship Band.
Okay.
So there has been some slight
renaming of the band. What has changed and what has remained in this quarter of a century, Brian?
Yeah, I think it's the time itself, you know, the maturation, if you will, of our becoming more of a band. You know, it really was there from the first note we ever played together, that connection and that affinity for you know, each other and the sound we would make together. But it gets deeper and deeper over the years, you know, the more you get in and out of the van together and, you know, like share life together. It's just a natural, you know, if we're doing it right, you know, the care gets deeper, the awareness and the unspoken things that have come about over 25 years, I don't take it for granted.
They become more honed and more refined. And,
very much so.
Yeah. That's beautiful to hear, because on the other hand, I mean, you have made, I think, 7 studio recordings in those 25 years, which is not a hell of a lot, I would say.
No.
And I figure maybe in between there must have been years where you maybe even didn't play at all. Is that true? Or did you keep playing all the time?
We kept playing all the time. Thankfully. I John was always writing and I was always writing. It just... I don't know, there were certain, I don't know, hurdles to overcome in life, maybe, that kept us from going into the studio, you know, every year. So that we would have sort of 20 records in existence. But we're making up for some lost time right now. We have essentially 3 recordings in process and near completion right now. And so... You know, trying to move forward and keep us together as much as possible.
So records that will more reflect what you are playing right now, because I mean, even King's Highway is being recorded 5-6 years ago. So
yeah,
again, you might have moved forward since, and of course, the material is the material, and you will work with it. But
yeah, absolutely. That certain things, even during our first recording, for instance. There were songs that John had written a decade before that.
All right.
That we tried to record for our first recording. And somehow it just didn't seat. It didn't find a place. Mm-hmm. And then come Perceptual, that song specifically that I'm speaking of in the title of the album, all of a sudden we came back to it and it was time for it to come to light. So that mystery is something I stopped wondering, oh, why? And, you know, I just sort of let it go and I wait for it to reveal itself, you know, and that's how it's been.
I find that so telling and so wise, because for one, I find it really very beautiful that there is no rush in doing this recording stuff. I mean, not leaving alone the fact that CDs probably aren't that important anymore as they used to be. Mm-hmm. But to have the grandeur, I would even say, to really let years pass before something new comes out.
Yeah.
Because there's time passing in between and people can really digest the record for a while, and then after a while they come back and say, oh, they are still there. They have made something new.
That too.
And then, I mean, the time as such, also listening to you playing the drums is a total mystery to me, because you are so wonderfully alert and yet so often the time is just so free. Hmm. And you're always there. You're always super accurate with everything. And at the same time, you feel like there is this openness, this vast space, this vast time in the music. So I find that very fitting.
Thank you.
To have this...
Thank you for that compliment. This means a lot.
Very gentle.
Your perception.
Thing with time. Your brother is 5 years older than you, and you know, he is a drummer, happens to be a drummer.
Yes.
And, little me, of course, thinks, because I have a brother who's 5 years older than
I. Oh, wow.
Has there ever been any kind of rivalry between the drumming brothers?
No. Thankfully, because he was, you know, very gracious as a... older brother to include me and bring me along, you know, as I was following his, you know, rather on his heels, if you will. So he was gracious in that way. And he's off now playing with Lucinda Williams doing other things. And he's just rock solid. So, you know, we have different orbits, but they overlap as well. And so thankfully we get to play together with this family band, you know, my dad being a pastor but singer.
And Brady Blade Sr.
Exactly.
85 years now.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic.
So he's, you know, it's just great to, you know, we share that. And it's like I said, these unspoken things that exist between us, we just understand each other, I think, you know.
So it's just the two brothers who are actually playing both drums, because you can see in the videos, you can see your father singing and a certain band on the stand and the choir in the background
and
the energy going with it. And it's really very touching. So
it's fun.
So, and it's your brother. So you've filmed that. And,
yes. Yeah. Thankfully. I don't know. It was something that came from my childhood, and the Hallelujah Train, a show that existed locally in our region that my dad hosted on a local TV station. So it was all about gospel and coming, you know, introducing or exposing people to what he thought was valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there was no archive of this decade of shows kept, mm-hmm. which is sad, because there were some special things. But so I thought, okay, at this point in life, what can I do about it if there's no document of it? So the Hallelujah Train really was a reformation, if you will, of this idea, and speaks to Dad's ministry and what he does. And
and of course, using the songs that he would...
Totally.
Yeah.
Just like he's always trying to reach people and connect. So.
In a side note, it's said that your father is one of the few remaining pastors of this civil rights movement.
Oh, right.
And to what extent would he be involved in those times and struggles?
It's interesting that you... thank you for your... your research and you know, like connecting dots relative to time. Yes, he and my mother, they grew up in a time of segregation, and much of this way of thinking unfortunately still exists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, he has to reconcile that. We all do, I think, color lines and status and station in life. Like, okay. Where does it get real for humanity here? You know, what do you need and what do I need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think he, with the gospel message, you know, he's trying to unify people and say, let's look to Christ, you know, in this situation. Like, are we really trying to walk the walk that we talk, you know,
mm-hmm.
or are we just, oh, I'm black, so this is how this, you know, well, okay, I understand the cultural boxes we live in,
mm-hmm.
but then the greater, vision, I think, doesn't necessarily separate us. It actually connects us. So
as long as you really keep this faith
totally.
And really be directed by it in a way,
exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure he's had his struggles, you know, as we all have in life, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, we keep trying and, you know, every day.
Seeing you like now and seeing you play, there's always this remarkable serenity about you, this joy. And I was wondering, is this also steeped in faith, or is this just steeped in what else?
Well, what else, right? Yeah, I always think about, thankfully, you know, growing up, my parents were very good to us, in the sense that they shared their faith, their walk in life with us. And at a certain point, you know, we're getting into our teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we had to make our own choice about it. So obviously I ran around the other way, you know, far away from any of that, before I came to realize, okay, without faith, it's impossible to please God. I just, like, so I knew, even as I was running away, that you know, I was still, his eyes on the sparrow, and I knew he was watching, and I knew that he was waiting and knocking, So I needed to, you know, find it myself, find him myself. So that gives me great joy to know that, okay, I am kept, and I have a strong tower that I can run to. And I think that's how the Fellowship Band has remained together all these years, because it's not my doing. You know, you can't make people love you.
No.
You can't, you know, I wish you please stay. Well, you know, you just, so that is a blessing. And I really don't take that for granted, that everybody's willing to come together when we have a few opportunities, like to play in Hamburg.
And of course, you. Yeah.
25 years between,
but yeah, yeah.
Still.
Yeah. There are, of course, among the many, many names of brilliant musicians that you've been working with over those decades and even partly before, it's mostly Joni and Wayne who come to my mind, of course, and I guess to everybody's mind who has followed your path. And I would like to ask pretty much the same question regarding both. To what extent working so closely with them for such a long period of time has influenced and changed your musicianship, and your feeling as a human being?
Wow, those two pillars in my life, really. It's so deep. Both of them, Wayne and Joni, I was roughly 16 when I first started buying records and got my driver's license, you know. Mm-hmm. My little Volkswagen Beetle, you know, it had a cassette player in it. And a friend gave me two cassettes at that time, two Joni cassettes, Hijira.
And which must have just have come out by no, it was 78 it came out.
So this was, this is roughly 86. So,
okay.
You know, almost.
So which one was the other one then?
Mingus. So there's Wayne there on that recording. But even before that, at around the same time, I bought three of my first vinyl records of jazz. And those three records were Juju, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Ugetsu, and Miles Davis Live at the Plug Nickel.
Well.
So I'm looking, I get them home, and I realize, okay, I know I got this Wayne Shorter Juju album, but okay, oh, he's on this Art Blakey record too. And these songs, and oh, and the Miles Davis, that's him too. So they've been this thread in my life, these harbingers of like, wow, what's coming? You know, in a way, being prepared to meet them somehow. Oh. I mean, never in my mind, but
yeah,
I knew that I owed them a great debt just from what I was hearing and what I was receiving from their music. So it was already transforming my life. Before I met them,
they primed you even before they knew you.
Yeah, so that is so mystical to me, and talk about divine intervention. You know, like it feels there's something at work that we don't see that's coming, and you know the preparation, and so I don't know how to describe the impartation and what they've. How they've enriched my life is just beyond description. Yeah,
and I reckon it kind of stayed like this all the time, even though maybe getting closer to work with the heroes and the idols might also have harsher sides sometimes. Maybe, you know, people are not so friendly, or they are in a bad mood, or, you know, you're getting more realistic about the human side of idols.
Right. I guess, you know, that would be... Unfortunately, if you have such reverence for someone, not having met them, and then you meet the man or the woman, and they aren't this parallel light that you've received, you know, from their artistry, but in their case, Wayne and Joni, they're beyond shining, you know, and true to their word, if you will, you know, and their expression, you know. Wayne he would always. You know, give me such encouragement and laughter, you know, and seeing what I thought at the time when I first started playing with him, you know, mistakes. But he's like, no, these opportunities come and gives you a whole nother, you know, perspective on things. So he always find the light in everything.
Yeah, wonderful. Do you recall how this came about at all in the first place?
him choosing you, calling you?
I'm not sure. Perhaps, you know, he had his ear to the ground and listened to things. But I'd already been playing with Joni a bit. So
it might have been even her.
Yeah, yeah.
Her again, music.
Yeah, yeah, so what a, you know, what a deep thing.
Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah.
There are two of your side projects, I would call them. The one is this Black Dub, which just has made one record, and then the other one is Mama Rosa, which also is a big family affair, as I understand, from your grandmother.
Right.
It's a kind of a singer-songwriter album of yours.
Sure. Yeah.
And I would like to know, are you pursuing these two avenues still, and to what extent?
Well, Black Dub is really based in my relationship with Daniel Lanois, and also, again, he
which goes way back, of course, first record producer. And,
totally. Yeah. Meeting in New Orleans in 1992, roughly, 93. We became such fast friends, and he introduced me to Joni.
Oh, right.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. You know, he knew that I was a fan, but played her some music that we were recording, and that's how that relationship began. But so Black Dub, really, I think it was only the life of that one recording because Daryl Johnson and Trixie Whitley, they're on their own career paths. But Daniel and I remain connected, and we play when we have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The Mama Rosa music, oh, man, I cannot wait to get back and record again because songs are piling up and waiting in the corner. You know, it's something I'm passionate about and I constantly do. But I'm trying to get to, like I say, these fellowship recordings. I don't wear multiple hats change them quickly. I need to focus and sort of finish these things. And then I'm going to turn my attention probably early next year back towards the Mama Rosa mm-hmm. project mm-hmm. and reassembling that band of friends and those songs.
And you are playing guitar on Mama Rosa.
Yes,
so
yes.
You have enough space for that, even when you're not wearing different hats?
Well, that's one thing that stays, because my composing, I compose at the guitar, so it comes out in, you know, one or two directions. Either it's fellowship band music, mm-hmm. or all of a sudden there's a story with words, and it's a Mama Rosa song. You know, like the same well, but a different tributary.
You know? Meaning that you're also composing for the fellowship band, you're also composing on guitar.
Yeah, so oh, wow. It's okay. Coming, it's just coming from there, and I never know which direction it's going to take. I just follow the line, if you will, follow the flow of the river. So sometimes they cross, you know, like, oh, it starts out with a word, a lyrical idea. For instance, there's a song called Evan Rude 50, Trembling, oh, yeah, on the Perceptual motor album. Yeah. Which is a memory of my dad and I fishing. It's about all that. And so that started out with this little idea, but then it ended up living in an instrumental fellowship band world.
So it crossed over, but it could even cross back at some point if you feel like, well, now it's time to record that as a song.
You know, that has never happened yet, but, you know, I'm open.
Yeah, cool. Looking forward to Mama Rosa 2 then.
Thank you.
For this new one.
Me too.
I had mentioned in the beginning you have been playing here with three different musicians so far. Mm-hmm. Wolfgang Mutschby, the Austrian guitar player, and two different quintet ones, and then the trio just last year, which was fabulous, of course.
Oh, sure.
Both in the recital hall, and then in the grand hall you were playing with Joshua Redman with the...
Oh, sure.
With the revived Mood Swing reunion.
Right.
It was just 22 or so.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you were here with Chick, which was awesome.
Wow.
In 2017, just after the opening. It was in April or so.
Wow.
With Eddie Gomez on bass.
Yes, I remember that tour. Wow.
And when I was researching this, I realized there was another concert already scheduled with Chick.
Yes, sadly.
And
2020 started, and we had to stop that tour, you know, as the pandemic began, or rather started to move around the world. I was so disappointed. And it just obviously a very heavy, you know, like you never know when it's the last time you'll see somebody. And unfortunately, when Chick and I, you know, we say, "Hi, right, man, see you in November," or what everyone thought, perhaps, you know, we reconvene. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, this is also part of life, huh?
It is.
The older we get, the more we have to accept that this is just happening.
That's,
you know,
true.
People just, one of a sudden, they are gone. And
yeah.
And such influential people. And I mean, I remember this concert vividly. Oh. I mean, it was so flabbergasting. And I've heard Chick a couple of times, but this was... Oh. And you know what I say about this explosive serenity of yours on the drums and this openness, and Eddie Gomez, which I, who I hadn't heard for decades,
yes.
When I suddenly was there, you know, playing with you guys.
Yes.
It was totally fantastic.
Awesome.
Just one more thing that I would like to briefly touch upon. I was very moved when I was listening to some of the talks that or speeches that had been given at the Democratic National Convention. And Kamala, she would mention her upbringing. And she said, you know, I grew up with the music of Miles and Coltrane and Aretha Franklin. Mm. And it really took me in a way because I was wondering, did ever a president or wannabe president of the United States of America would have mentioned those names in such a prominent occasion?
Mm-hmm.
Have you reflected on that one? Did you hear about this? Did you hear her say this? Do you believe that she really means it? Or is it maybe just, you know, trying to get a certain focus group interested in her?
That would be, I doubt that. Like,
I want to doubt that.
You're right. You know. The wherewithal to, you know, that would have to come from, hopefully, a place of sincerity and honesty, like, oh, yeah, that's the music, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and because I feel as if jazz, if we can even box Miles Davis and John Coltrane in that genre, you know, it's beyond, you know? So the fact that, you know, it has touched her, or I hope it's just not generational, you know what I mean? Because it really is, I feel like, eternally valuable. You know, whenever you come to know about it, it's like, oh, wow, okay, that exists. And it's a deep, never-ending well, you know, to draw from, inspiration. So I think about Jimmy Carter, you know, and the Allman Brothers, or even JFK, and like, you know, okay, happy birthday, there's Hank Jones on piano. You know, like there's all this confluence and these worlds of political and artistical that cross. You just hope that, you know, it seems like we can't agree on one thing, but maybe we can with Miles and Coltrane. You know what I mean? Like, you hope
at
that.
At least that,
right?
You know? Yeah, in my perception, it felt really genuine. And my wife was then the one who said, you know, you are naive. Of course, she only does that because. And I said, no, this can't be true.
Right. Well,
I don't want it to be true.
I think a pop artist of the day, if that were mentioned as something that were more so like, oh, this is, you know, that's my music. Well, that might be more of a ploy. More so because. I mean, God forbid that somebody would know, like, who's Miles and who's Coltrane? Who are these guys?
I was wondering, you know, right. Household names for everybody there?
You never know.
So she would take chances saying it.
I'm thankful that, you know, when I received those Joni Mitchell cassettes, you know, I'd never heard anything like it. Yeah, at that point in my life growing up, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Al Green, the Jacksons, James Cleveland, you know, Aretha Franklin. But this was like, oh, what is she sharing, you know? So I guess there's always a point at which you discover something that has existed that you just didn't know about because it's endless, right?
Yeah.
So.
And that then becomes so meaningful for yourself.
Yes.
Because it changes your avenues and your way of listening and everything.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the depth of, you know, John Coltrane's music, which his birthday yesterday, I listened to. There's a station in New York City at Columbia University, WKCR. They play 24 hours of John Coltrane music.
Oh, wow.
So it's great. I could hear somebody else, like, curate a playlist, and it's just surprise after surprise. And
wonderful.
Because I haven't heard it in so long. But boy.
So you immersed yourself on traveling.
And it's still like so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just like, whew. So it's, you know, when you get to it, it'll be there. it's waiting for you.
Yeah. So I wish you a wonderful concert tonight and the great remaining dates in Europe.
Thanks, man.
And I hope to see you soon again.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you.
Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.